Joining us today is someone who has firmly placed herself into the category of a badass and world-class businesswoman. She's an entrepreneur, best-selling author, and public speaker. Now, she co-founded the billion-dollar brand Quest Nutrition, and her work has impacted probably well over a billion people. She's a co-founder and president of Impact Theory Studios that helps bring change of mindset and empowerment to all ages so they can really make earth-shattering breakthroughs in their own lives and take control of their futures. As if that resume wasn't impressive enough, she also hosts a hit series called Women of Impact, which showcases females who've overcome incredible hardship to achieve massive success. Her number one best-selling book, Radical Confidence, takes a no-nonsense approach to becoming the hero of your own life. Here to talk about overcoming gut disease and taking control of your future, Lisa Bilyeu. Welcome to Reversible.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. I'm super excited for our talk today.
I'm so excited about this. And that introduction, I bet you never get sick of hearing that. What an accomplishment.
What's funny is it doesn't really compute with who I feel to be. You know, there's a big difference between the stuff that you've done and then how you feel about yourself. And when you know that you're dealing with health issues and you just had the struggle, that is what is really real. The rest is kind of the thing that ends up being the goals that I've reached, but it doesn't define who I am. And so it's super exciting to hear, and it tells the negative voice in my head that you're no good to shut up sometimes to hear, you know, the things that I've done. But at the same time, yeah, I try not to get defined by the things that I've achieved, more about the person that I'm showing up to be.
I like that. I think it's a really reasonable, grounded way to make sure you're actually still meeting your purpose. Because once you hit that goalpost, I mean, that's the only reason we really do anything, is because we're striving for something. We want to make an impact. We have a purpose. We have something to fulfill in our lives. And once you hit that, unless you have a next goalpost, you kind of just stop, fizzle out.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of think of my purpose as being the sort of thing that I'll never be done. Like, until I actually take my last dying breath, which I always hope is in my hundreds, I really don't plan to be done. And I think that I interviewed a woman actually that was 102 years old, and she wrote a book about the six key things to living a beautiful, long and happy life. And the number one thing that she says, the number one thing, it wasn't sleep, it wasn't diet, it wasn't exercise, it was what she calls the juice. And so the juice being your purpose. And she says she can literally tell, she's seen people around her die early, young, die from cancer, die from so many different diseases the second they give up on their juice. And that really hit me, that I just tried to remember, you got to keep feeding your juice until your dying breath.
It's interesting. We look at Alzheimer's. I know we're pivoting already, and I'm cool with it. Alzheimer's is an interesting concept because obviously there's biological and physiological factors. It's called type 3 diabetes. It's an inflammatory condition that works. Mm-hmm. But one of the things they notice in the fast, rapid degradation of the elderly in nursing homes, it's not that they're not doing enough Sudokus. It's not that they're not learning. It's lack of socialization, meaning, and purpose. And that's what causes the mm-hmm. fastest decline in human cognition.
Yeah, it's crazy to hear, but also at least we're starting to figure out what those, you know, the causes are. And I don't know if you know Dr. Amen, the brain doctor. I had him on my show, and he actually did a scan of my brain because my grandmother suffered from Alzheimer's. Mm. And he said, look, Lisa, your genetics are the bullet in the gun, but your lifestyle is your finger on the trigger. And that just really hit me to think about, okay, yes, we all have genetics potentially in us that are going to lead us down certain paths, but how do you live your life? And I'm all about complete and utter ownership over my health and over my life. And so if I'm not feeling well, if I'm feeling tired, if I'm fatigued, if my hormones are out of whack, I always go back to, how can I take control? How can I own this? And not like a fault as in like I should shame myself, but absolutely taking ownership and responsibility for it, because I refuse to let my genetics dictate what's going to happen to me.
I love that. It's so easy to kind of become a victim of our circumstance and go, well, it's genetic. Well, my mother had this. Well, my dad had this. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, it's kind of a cop-out. It's exactly that. Genetics, mm-hmm. like you said, they load the trigger. Just because somebody else had it doesn't mean you're doomed to get it. It means you are predisposed, and it's up to you on how you deal with that. Now, yeah. There may be some listeners here, Lisa, who don't know you very well, which I honestly, at this point in your career, it's probably surprising to hear, but out of 7-8 billion people, someone's not going to know you. So I'd love to go over your background a bit here. You dealt with a lot of gut issues and you're here now. What I'd love for people to take away from this, there's this interesting phenomenon that I might get attacked for here. And this is the idea. I kind of want to rattle people. We're talking about science, not feelings, is that there's an interesting phenomenon, especially in autoimmune diseases or inflammatory conditions. People sort of get stuck in this. They get a diagnosis. They identify with the diagnosis. They live in it. They live by this. And they almost become complacent, rather willingly just staying where they are. Well, I can't fix this disease now. My doctor said so. Therefore, it is what it is. But you've completely flipped the script on that, which really is the defining definition of what we do here on Reverse Able, this reversible podcast. Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through your history with gut issues, what you've done, how they've really impacted you? And I mean, to get you where you are now, it's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on where you want to start, maybe I'll just start from like the worst day of my life. And what better place to start, right?
Great place.
yeah, exactly. So Quest had been a massive success. We grew at 57,000%. And so I went from being a stay-at-home wife, supporting my husband of for 8 years, cooking, cleaning, to then him having this crazy idea about this protein bar. I was the good wife. Hey, babe, how can I help? How can I support? I started helping shipping from my living room floor, growing at 57,000%. The next thing I knew, we became a billion-dollar company. Like literally within 5 years, we went from zero to a billion. So it was a lot of work, a lot of late nights, a lot of stress. And so one day, So in those moments where you're struggling, where you're really trying to build something, you've got a goal, there are always going to be inevitable days that you don't feel motivated. You think, oh my God, what am I doing? Everyone thinks I'm a fool. I'm not going out with my friends because I'm trying to build this company that no one believes in. And so what Tom and I would do, my husband, is we would drive around Beverly Hills and we would just dream. And we're like, what house would we pick when, you know, Quest is finally big? And actually, so this is before it was big. So we would drive around like, what house are we going to pick? Where are we going to live? Like, what's the dream? How do we keep motivating ourselves as we're driving this, you know, broken down Ford Focus that the steering wheel would start to rattle if it went over like 50 miles an hour? Because all of our money was in the company. And so we would motivate ourselves. And I had this dream because for me, a dream is never real just by saying, I want a big house. It has to feel emotive. And because I'm an early 90s chick, I love hip hop. So I said, I really want a house that has a waterfall and I wasn't going to put my bikini on, babe. I'm going to pop a bottle of champagne and I'm going to twerk for you. Like the hip hop music videos. Like that was the dream, Josh.
Should have invited P. Diddy.
Yeah, exactly. So flash forward, Quest becomes a billion-dollar company. We finally actually get the house in Beverly Hills with a waterfall. Like, it's the freaking dreams coming true. We get a bottle of, like, Dom Perignon, and I've got my bikini on, and I'm like, this has actually come true. Like, you dream, but there's a big difference between the dream and then the reality. And I couldn't believe it. And so we're celebrating. We pop the bottle. I take a swig of the champagne, and just like that, it felt like my gut erupted. That is the best way that I can explain it. And that was 7 years ago, and I'm still on the path to rebuilding my gut back. Now, when I look back at that moment, I had no idea what happened. I had no idea why. I was having some bothersome, like I would eat some food, it would bother me, but I never processed why. I was just ignoring it. Now, that's one of the things that I think a lot of us, especially women, do is just ignore it, right? Don't worry about self-care. Focus on other people. Focus on helping others. Show up for other people. Ignore all the signs, all the signs, all the signs. But it just erupted. And in that moment, I had to stop and I couldn't. Just to give you kind of a context of how bad it got, I couldn't eat more than 4 to 5 ingredients. I considered salt an ingredient, so I could only eat lamb, beef, chicken, and coconut oil and salt. So that was 5. That was for at least 6 months. My hair was falling out, my nails were brittle. I couldn't even stand up for longer than 5 minutes at a time because my gut was so protruded out that standing up was just too much like pressure, and so I'd have to sit back down. Now, in hindsight, I had to look back and go, what caused this? But to be honest, when you've got a dream and you're really working hard, you just get in this perpetual motion. And because my gut just had to stop me in my tracks, it forced me to look at my lifestyle. It forced me to look at my habits. It forced me to look at how I was seeing health and how I was abusing my body from ignoring the sleep, not to eating fat. Like all these things that I thought were quote unquote either healthy, you know, fat was bad and carbs are bad for you and all of this stuff. It just stopped me in my tracks. Now, when you're that sick and you really can't achieve your dreams, you don't feel good about yourself and your hormones are completely out of whack. I am not very much an emotional person. Like outwardly, I'm able to kind of control my emotions. I couldn't control them. I was crying for no reason. My husband was triggering me, the poor guy, and I was just a mess. And so I was going to every single doctor. Because I then had the finances, I was just going like, oh, I'm going to go to the best people in the world and I want you to fix me. And I was going to this doctor and I was like, please fix me. To the next doctor, please fix me. And every time they would make suggestions, I would take their advice blindly. I wouldn't listen to my gut, pun intended. I wouldn't listen to, you know, my head going, hang on a minute, that actually doesn't seem right. Right now, Lisa, all you can eat is beef. Like that really feels good. But this other doctor just suggested that you cut out all protein and you go on a raw vegetable diet. But I ignored the voice in my head that was telling me that doesn't sound right. And I was putting all of my power into the doctor's hands because I thought they knew my body better than I knew my body. And I got so close and desperate to help fix me that I was this close. I think I was like 2 weeks away from getting, an immunoglobulin transfusion? Yeah. And my husband's like, you know what? Before you do, there's this thing called like the gut biome. Like, because this was, you know, 7 years ago, we weren't talking like we were now. And he's like, there's this new test out. Like, maybe we should just see what's going on with your gut. So I was like, okay, so I go to the doctors or we get somebody who can actually start to read my gut biome. And I'm sitting there with my food, like what I've eaten. And I'm like, okay, new doctor, going to tell them what I've eaten. And the very first things out of her mouth after she did the microbiome test was, how do you eat? And I was like, what does she mean, how? I was like, don't you mean what do I eat? She goes, no, I want to know what you do when you eat and what are your habits? And I was like, God, I don't know what this chick's on about, but I might as well tell her. So I'm like, well, I work. And she's like, well, what do you do during breakfast? I'm like, I work. What do you do during lunch? I work. What do you do? And I work. And she's like, well, that's your problem. And I was like, she has no idea what she's talking about. Like, I couldn't at the time, and again, this is 7 years to orient people, I didn't understand how stress could impact the gut. I didn't understand how lack of sleep could impact the gut. I didn't understand how I was showing up every day. Like, I was just working 14, 15 hours a day, not taking a break, not caring about my health, all the signs that my health was starting to get in disarray, because it actually didn't happen overnight. When I say like that, it had actually been 10 years of me abusing my body, if you will, on ignoring all the signs, in not having fat, in not having carbs, thinking that I was going to get quote-unquote fat and worrying about that because I came from a family that looks were important. And so I didn't understand what I was doing to my body or my behaviors until that very moment that I started to talk to that doctor. And so in hindsight, I now go back and go, oh, when I was a kid, I was brought up with a mum that was borderline anorexic, so I learned certain habits from her. I was teased and bullied as a kid for my looks, and the only thing I got praised for is that I was a skinny young kid. And so as I started to evolve and my body started to develop in my teen years, I started to worry that the only thing that I had to get validation from was my physique. And so that's why I cut out fat. I cut out carbs. I was counting calories. I was running on a treadmill, making sure that I was burning more calories than I was intaking. You do that long enough, and what I didn't realize again was 70% of your immune system is carried in your gut. Of course, surprise, surprise, I was getting sick. So I was taking antibiotics. So as I was taking antibiotics, I then would run, get unhealthy again, take more antibiotics. So by the time that moment by the waterfall where I drank that champagne, I had been on 10 years of not having fat, not having carbs, and taking an abusive amount of antibiotics to the point where I was over 4 times a year. And I wasn't replenishing my gut. And so, yeah, I mean, that's now knowing, it's horrifying. But here's the thing, going back to your question. Originally, I was just giving my power over to the doctors. I was like, well, if the doctors hadn't given me antibiotics, then I wouldn't be here. If I didn't grow up with a mum that was borderline anorexic, then I wouldn't be here. If I just hand over, like, oh, the doctors are going to fix me, then, again, the power's in their hands. But the second I flipped my mindset, the second I said, Lisa, how is this working for you? And it wasn't working at all. I'm so goal-oriented that I was like, what would it look like to actually achieve your goals? What would it actually look like to get your body back to health? And I was like, step number one is I actually have to realize this is all my fault. Now, I understand the word fault can be very triggering for people. Use the word that is going to empower you to take action. Ownership, responsibility. I actually like the word fault. Why? Because it triggers me enough to take the action. So once I realized, oh, Lisa, this is all your fault. You grew up with a mum, but yes, the second you're an adult, it's on you. Yes, you know, I let other people's opinions dictate whether I should be eating fat or carbs or not. I wasn't listening to my body. When the doctor gave me antibiotics, Josh, after like the 10th time, he goes to me, you know, I probably shouldn't give you this many antibiotics. Not once did I ask why. Not once did I go and research what does too many antibiotics mean. I just blindly trusted other people. And the second I flipped it, and the second I said, Lisa, this is on you, that spurred me into action. And so the action steps that I then took has led me to being able to monitor my health, get back on track, take the right supplements, and then, you know, on this journey that I have then been on for the last 7 years. But it took that flip of responsibility that then changed my life.
It's really interesting because working in, especially like I do, Crohn's and colitis, a lot of these people, it just kind of happens, or they don't recognize that past. It can be very difficult. And none of them asked for this. Nobody asks to be sick. The disease sort of just creeps up. And whether or not it becomes fully autoimmune, that's another topic. But the idea is that you get all these people who are sick. And you're right, the idea of fault is very triggering, especially when you didn't choose it and you're spending every penny you have trying to get well, trying to look for some kind of solution. Some of these people, I mean, they're spending $10,000, $12,000 a month on medication just to suppress their immune system so it stops reacting to whatever it's reacting to. And so, you know, fault is a very tricky one. I like that you called that out and said it can be very triggering, but the idea is finding empowerment. And I think something that's very important there is recognizing what roles these things had to play. Like you said, you took all the antibiotics, didn't ask questions. Unfortunately, we do have to do our own research, especially with the modern medical system the way it is. Now, that system has failed you time and time again. I mean, what sort of interventions have you tried unsuccessfully or some moderately successfully to get yourself to a state where you were improving?
Yeah, the biggest key for me, and again, thank you for pointing out the fault thing, in obviously, you know, your audience, you know, way more than I do. And so when it becomes the genetic thing, of course it is not your fault.
Sure.
But even, let's even take my dad, who's type 3 diabetic. I love him to bits, but he's the guy who will drink a glass of wine and then take the medication. And I'm like, Dad, if you just didn't drink the wine, if you just didn't have the sugar, you wouldn't have to take the medication. And so even in being able to say, what is my behavior that I can take ownership over? And again, there might be some times where it's like, there's no behavior. If you have cancer, I almost don't even know where to go with that. Like, I'm not trying to trigger anyone, but I would definitely look at your behavior and say, do I put myself first? Do I eat well? Do I sleep well? Do I say no to the partying? Do I say no to the alcohol when everyone's drinking alcohol? Do I say no to the cake when it's a birthday party? All these little things that maybe we can possibly take ownership over. I would just urge people to take ownership over. And now, sorry, going back to your question, is the very first thing I did in taking the ownership is I just need to take inventory. I need to stop shaming myself emotionally. I need to stop blaming myself as a negative. So that's why I said fault was empowering to me. It wasn't a shameful thing that I put upon myself. So being able to say, okay, put away the shame, put away all of that. Now, how do I take action, take inventory of just what's happening? So for the first like 3 months, I had a food diary and I wrote down every single day, Josh, from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to bed. What time did I wake up? How did I feel? When was my first drink? What did I drink? Was it coffee? What was my first meal? What time did I eat my meal? How did I feel after my meal? When was my first bowel movement that day? Did I have a bowel movement that day? I detailed everything out just to take inventory. And what I started to realize was, in like the first 3 weeks of just doing this, I was like, huh. Every time, like I would get excruciating pain where I would be doubled over, I couldn't breathe, and then I would have to run to the restroom, like all the things you don't want to talk about, like that, it was very bad. And so what I realized, even after the first 3 weeks, I was like, oh, what's interesting is every time I drink coffee, it bothers me. Huh, I never thought about that. Maybe I should stop drinking coffee. Huh, every time I'm executive producing a show, my husband has a YouTube show, at the time I didn't, so I was just behind the scenes, and he was shooting once or twice a week, and every time he was shooting, like clockwork, I would have a gut issue the day of a shoot. So I was like, huh, that's interesting. Why on earth would I have gut issues? I do everything else the same. And so it just started to unravel and allow me to question why. Once I was able to question why, then I was able to do testing. So the testing was, huh, what if I didn't eat before a shoot? Would that make a difference? Actually, it did. Okay, how did I feel if I ate after a shoot? Actually, that still really bothered me. Okay, what if I have half a meal instead of a full meal? And it just allowed me to start listening to my body. I wasn't listening to doctors. I wasn't taking medication. I was just, listen to your body, Lisa, and then act in accordance. So that was just absolutely huge for me. Then the next thing was getting your hormones tested, getting your blood tested, and then see what are the things that are in your control. So then it became a supplements game. I was really low in iron. I had SIBO. Okay, so what's a SIBO diet look like? And I would pull up, I would do my research. I would literally go on and do, you know, I was my own doctor. So I would look at what a SIBO diet was. And I was like, that's so interesting. I can have 4 almonds, but if I have 10 almonds, my gut is in disarray. And so I started to then just follow the SIBO diet. Then I started to hear and learn about, you know, lectins and nitrates and doing the research myself and then seeing how I felt about it. Not taking a doctor's opinion. Go, huh, if I eat peppers and I peel the skin, I actually feel better. My stomach doesn't bother me. Interesting. What's that about? Right? And then I start to research. And then the supplement thing was then, okay, I'm low in this, I'm too high in this, how do I adjust? And then the ownership over making sure, with as busy as my life is, that's just an excuse. If I want to, I absolutely can prioritize my health. If I want to, I absolutely can neglect my health and I can prioritize my business. And so I just had to sit back and say, what's priority number one? Because you can only have one first place. And in that moment, I then flipped it. My business used to be, well, my relationship with my husband, but that actually takes, you know, slightly less energy on a day-to-day than running a business. So I then just flipped it. I was like, my health has to come first and then my business. And that flip as well allowed me to make sure that I was always showing up for myself first. I was prioritizing my health and then saying, well, I can say that I'm too busy, or I can just know supplements come first. And then I start to figure out ways to work around it. I have little supplement packs now that I do myself, and then I just carry them when I'm traveling. I carry them, you know, if I'm about to be on a shoot, I make sure that I have them before I come on a shoot. And so those are a couple of the little things that just immediately I started to do that really helped me feel good about the fact that I was starting to listen to myself again. Like that just emotionally and mentally changed everything. And when you can change how you feel about yourself, it will then dictate how you act and how the self-care that you do. And the fact that you prioritize yourself is literally telling me, Lisa, you come first. And so then that ended up having the knock-on effect on then all of my actions.
I love that. That is completely unreasonable. And by that, I mean, it is literally, there are no reasons it will not happen. No reasons in my life. And we were talking about fault earlier. You took all of that and made it your responsibility, your food, mm-hmm. your lifestyle. Oftentimes go, well, I'm too busy. You said, nope, it's got to be a priority. And you researched and you took it into your own hands rather than sort of opting for either learned helplessness or willful ignorance where you go, well, oh, well, there's nothing I can do. You have Google at your fingertips. On my phone, I have the internet. We have AI chatbots you can literally ask questions to that will send you down these rabbit holes. And you took all this ownership into your own hand and became entirely unreasonable. And that is truly powerful in the sense of getting to where you want to go. That's incredible. Now, I want to throw a curveball at you, Lisa, because this is what you do all the time. So he was at like, ooh, like I love a curveball.
Yeah, I do.
There are some people, again, especially in my life that I deal with, IBD is considered to be autoimmune. Now, I'm actually lecturing at a functional medicine academy a couple times a year, and I'm doing one this month actually coming up in November. I'm prepping. And we are comparing where IBD or Crohn's and colitis is considered to be autoimmune. No questions, no ifs, ands, or buts. The only thing we can do is give you immunosuppressant drugs or anti-inflammatories to manage this inflammation and hope you don't get worse. But I look at it, I started analyzing it differently. I actually took IBS and IBD on a sliding scale. And what I did is I said, IBS and IBD, they overlap the symptoms. If you look at pain, bloat, diarrhea, constipation, discomfort, food sensitivities, food intolerances, anxiety, depression, hormonal issues, the works, it's just worse in inflammatory bowel disease. And so if we can look at it, picture you go to the hospital with a thorn in your hand and it's swollen and infected. And you go into the hospital and all they do is give you ointment for the pain. That's kind of how they treat illness, right? No one's looking for the thorn. What is your body reacting to? And you took it into your own hands to figure out all that you did, the research, you did the tests, you food log and took inventory of every aspect of your life and said, I'm going to figure out my most reactive things. And that, even if you're not a scientist, you're not a doctor, it drew you in enough to find your own conclusions to get where you are today. And you were able to overcome these things. Shit, kudos to you. That's fucking incredible.
Thank you.
Damn. So my question to you, my curveball, is with all that context now behind us, those who are maybe dealing with the stuff that may be autoimmune, and there is truly an immune component, and they say, well, there's nothing I can do. It's just my immune system. I'm stuck. Is that, again, a triggering word for people, but look at this objectively. Is that victimhood or victim mentality? Is that, I'm sure a lot of cases people are stuck, but those who say there's nothing I can do, it's just my immune system, I have no power over the situation. What do you say to that?
Not being a doctor and not being a professional, I'm just going to give from an unbiased opinion, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think I would say, look, how does that serve you? Like, if you say to yourself, there's nothing I can do, does that make you feel empowered or disempowered? I also would say, maybe there's something I haven't thought of yet, because there's always new studies coming out. There's always new tests coming out. So I would keep looking. I would keep searching. And there's a big difference between false hope and then hope that can actually empower you. So at one point I realized I'm going to be fixed in a week. I'm going to be fixed in a month. I'm going to be fixed in 3 months. And then one day, it was so empowering, Josh. I just said to myself, Lisa, maybe you're never going to be fixed. And it was so empowering because I was like, now knowing that, how are you going to show up every day? What's your goal? What do you want to do in life? And now know how are you going to get there even if you're sick? That was so empowering because it wasn't like I knew how to fix myself. I just said, how do I make sure I continue to move towards my goal? Because I didn't want to live a life where I was not feeling good about myself. Emotionally and mentally. So if this is what I have to deal with, if for the rest of my life I can no longer stand up for longer than 5 minutes at a time, how am I going to make sure that I make the freaking most of it? How am I going to make sure I can still achieve my goals? How am I going to make sure that I love my freaking life? Because if I can project, if I don't do that, if I don't take action on my mindset, if I don't take action towards my goals, where am I going to be in 5 years? Where am I going to be in 10 years? And then ask myself the question, are you okay with that? And the answer for me was no. I am not okay with feeling like I can't achieve my goals. I am not okay with not being able to cuddle my husband. Like, I just couldn't even be intimate with him because I was so much in pain. And so there's that fine line, right, of like, how can I control the pain? Maybe it's meditation. Maybe it's a cold plunge. Maybe it's listening to great music. And I understand that isn't going to take the pain away, but I am not a person that I find personally feeling like a victim doesn't feel good to me. I just do not like the feeling. And so I refuse to feel like that. And because I refuse to feel like that, I search for answers. Even if it means I can't fix myself and the actual pain itself, I can absolutely start to fix the way that I think about it, the way that I think about life, the way that I approach things. And again, that was so empowering that then encouraged me to try and find a solution. So I would say to anyone, how is it working for you? You have been dealt a damn horrible deck of cards. It absolutely freaking sucks. My family doesn't have to deal with the health issues that I have, but I don't look at them and wish I was them. I just say, how is this going to help you get stronger mentally, Lisa? And if you can find empowerment in that, you can honestly feel great about yourself, even when you're in pain. And that, I think, is what I would encourage people to do.
I love that. You know, it's interesting. There's a definition if we actually split the difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is circumstantial. Joy is in spite of circumstances. Mm-hmm. And what you've done is you found empowerment outside of a cage, regardless of circumstances, that no matter what it is, I'm going to take this and run with it and I'm going to make the most out of it. And that really does help contextualize, actually put some meat behind what I was saying with the sliding scale of IBS to IBD. For those who are dealing with any gut issues in this order, that there's hope in there somewhere. You're on a spectrum. And what we're now proposing is some of these gut diseases that we've previously seen through one narrow lens that there's nothing we can do, even in the Western medical system, we're now proving wrong. And I hope this really, in context with everything you've dealt with and what you've been able to make out of this, can contextualize it in a way where people can see this and go, maybe there is a better way. And maybe it's just enough of a thread for them to just hang on to, just keep pulling, just enough so they have some hope until they unravel the whole bloody sweater. That's what we're hoping for.
Yeah, I love that so much. And as much as we can empower people to do that, I think that that could really be life-changing. And in just me even figuring out what was wrong with me, because again, I had no idea. I was like, I don't understand. I can't stand up. I don't understand. I can't eat. Like, what is happening? To the point where I put a bit of pepper on my food. My husband almost had to rush me to the emergency room because I was in that much agony. And just going, how do I unravel it? How do I let go of the shame? And then to your point, like, how do I actually find the joy in this instead of the momentary happiness? Mm. And I ended up realizing and discovering that I had SIBO, I had leaky gut, I had a parasite because I was so weak. And so even that, I was like, oh my God, isn't a parasite? Like, people shame you for that stuff. And then I was like, hang on a minute. No, remember, Lisa, you said there's no freaking shame here. And so I just started even to talk about it because it's like, yes, my body is very weak right now. And yes, I ended up doing things that made me weak. And you better believe that I'm not going to show up, though, as a weak person because I like to feel strong, even if it's mentally. And I think that that all becomes part of the mindset that then allows you to either keep looking, keep searching for a meaning, right? And there's so many people that have found meaning and purpose when they're on their knees. And what I mean that is obviously metaphorically, like when you are crestfallen and you find yourself in the worst case scenario, how do you respond? And when you can find empowerment and motivation in being to your knees, it can be so beautiful, even though the moment really sucks. And I even remember saying to myself, this is really bad, Lisa. Like you don't have the energy, your hair's falling out. And I remember saying, how can I make this the best thing that's ever happened to me? I think it's Tony Robbins that said, how do you take the worst day and make it the best? And I was like, all right, channel Tony. And I was like, how can this be the best thing that's ever happened to me? Because it doesn't feel real, right? It doesn't feel like, oh, this is great, right? It just feels like, why me? Mm. Because you look at everyone else and no one has this problem. And again, realized that mentality didn't serve me. So I had to flip it And then I just reminded myself, maybe one day I can help somebody, I can save somebody's gut, I can give them the empowerment like what we're doing now to help somebody get through it, for them to feel motivated after they listen to this, to go out and work on their mindset and feel better about themselves. And that was my motivation piece.
You know, having these issues, having these health issues, has to swirl a lot of emotions. Things I commonly see with my clients, there's self-confidence, there's beauty standards, there's sexuality, mm-hmm. there's intimacy with their partners, like you talked about, like you can't even be intimate with your husband because you're in so much pain. You want to be dependable if you're a business owner like yourself, or if you have kids, you want to go to social gatherings. All that can really take its toll. What part of that, or what role did your empowerment play in taking control of these situations? What did they play in all these emotions that trickle down from sickness?
Oh God, it played in so much, because what I started to realize was, it wasn't just the pain, it was everything that you just mentioned. It's the hormones, it's I can't sleep well. So then you show up to not actually feel like your true self. And what I realized, one of the biggest aha moments, if you will, is, Lisa, you can't trust your feelings right now. That was actually huge for me, because feelings feel very real. And so in those moments, so I'm trying to run a business with my husband, he actually being very honest, we have a very open and honest relationship, he pulled me aside one day because I was like, you were so mean to me in that business meeting. And it was the first time I ever cried, like after a work meeting. And I was like, you were so mean. And he's like, babe, I love you. But in 5 years, I think it was 5 years at the time, in 5 years that we've been working together, never once have you broken down in tears, and never once have you taken something personal, like the word you've been mean to me, and made it about business. He's like, do you possibly think, possibly could you, you know, he was trying to caveat, but like, do you think this could be your hormones and your emotions? And in that moment, I had to go, oh my God, yes, he's right. And that means that I can't just be reactive. I actually have to acknowledge that this is very real, that this is actually happening to me. And it isn't something to be shameful over, but that I need to start taking each element as individual things and then work on them one by one. And so if it's sleep, how do I make sure that I get as much sleep as possible? If it's hormones, how do I start working on fixing my hormones? And so everything becomes this trickle down effect, where I had to then let go of the shame and guilt of not being able to be intimate with my husband. I then had to look in the mirror and be very honest with myself and say, Lisa, you don't feel good about yourself right now, but it's okay. Like, I kind of try to talk, even though I have a kind of a bit of a mean, aggressive voice in my head, I'm still just like, it's okay. It's okay right now to be too skinny. It's okay right now that you're losing your hair. Like, it's okay, because you're working on figuring out how you're going to come back from this. And once you can figure out stepping stones, slowly, each thing starts to change a little bit, right? I start to change my hormones a little bit, that then brings back my confidence a little bit. I then bring back my confidence a little bit, that makes me lean into paying attention to my supplements a little more, and paying attention to my supplements then makes me feel better about myself. Me feeling better about myself makes me take more care over how I, you know, my how I dress, because even then it was like, well, what's the point, right? And now you're just almost spiraling down versus trying to build yourself back up. So you take one little thing at a time, and then giving yourself the grace that your hormones all play a part in how you feel about yourself, your confidence, and then how you're responding to other people. And then kind of, you know, coming full circle is, I just had to remind myself that when I feel like someone's being mean or someone's being disrespectful, that doesn't always mean that I'm actually right. And that really helped me not have emotional responses that I would then later regret or be embarrassed about. Because all of these things become blockers in your healing process. And that's super freaking important to just note.
This is really fun for me as an interviewer. There's a lot of parts of these stories that you're talking about I've heard through other bits with you and Tom on a show or individually. It's kind of like being backstage to one of your favorite bands, you know? Get to hear them play live.
I love that.
So a lot of this stuff, Lisa, you've taken so much into your own hands. You've learned and understood even the fundamentals of this, the science of the gut and the microbiome. I mean, it becomes so empowering once you understand. And we can't ever fix anything. I tell my clients this all the time. I'm a huge advocate for education, because we can't fix it until we understand it. Like, if I go to take apart my car, it will never run again. I promise you that much. I cannot put it back together. And so you took this into your own hands, but the science of the microbiome, it's still something we really don't know enough about. Most doctors, you know, microbiomes and GI mapping, we actually, what you've done, like a stool sample, you get that DNA analysis of your stool, of the gut bacteria, and you can figure things out. There are a lot of doctors who still, they say, we don't even bother. It's a useless test. If we look at the math on it, I mean, there are 1,000 to 2,000 different species of bacteria, ballpark, in your gut, 7 to 9,000 strains. So we can say we have upwards of 18 million different types of bacteria and 2 to 5 pounds of it in your gut. So there are trillions and trillions and trillions of these things that perform every function. It's this vastly complex things that even doctors and GI specialists go, I don't want to touch this right now. Let's just do the drugs. But you took it on anyway. You're like, fuck the police. I'm going to get this done. And you did it. What was that undertaking like? I mean, it's massive. It's what I do for a living. And it still boggles my mind. But you undertook it enough to get a handle on it, enough to get yourself good enough to be where you are. And you're still moving forward. What was that process of education like in the face of obvious scientific adversity?
Yeah, it's really just listening to your body. I mean, it is trial and error all along the way. And so as I started to do the SIBO diet, as I started to just try different things, I wouldn't judge myself for something working or not working. I wouldn't go, well, it worked for that person. I can't believe it's not working for me. I would just go, oh, let me try this. Give myself a week, give myself 2 weeks and see how I feel. And I so believe that the food ends up being such a big part of it and your lifestyle is the other big part of it. So I was just breaking them down step by step. And I was like, okay, what are the things that I can improve in my lifestyle that then can have an impact on my gut and my digestion? And then what are the foods that I eat and how do I feel about it? And so with the foods that I would eat, I would do a little test. I would take one new item and I would introduce it and I would have a bite. And then I would take inventory for 2 days of how I felt about that one little bite. Like, you can imagine, this is what I take, it's taken me 7 years, right? To even just like come up with a regimen that works for me. But I would have a blueberry. One blueberry, and then I would wait 2 days and see how I felt. And I'm like, huh, all right, that blueberry didn't bother me. What happens if I have 3 blueberries? And then I would wait another week. I wouldn't test anything else new. All I would do is be on the blueberry test, right? And then I would go on to a different test. And I was just patient with myself. Because if I think about it, I'm 44 now. I actually want to live till I'm around 100. Like, I don't joke about that. I actually do. I'm not even halfway in my lifespan. So if I can figure this out now and just be slow with it, can you imagine the 50 years of amazingness that I'm going to have if I just take my time instead of rush, instead of think that I'm going to solve it overnight? So I literally would take one food item, I would test that out, and then I would really, and then I would correlate that with my habits. So I would, I took a glucose monitor, a continuous glucose monitor, and I started to look at how my blood was spiking or my blood sugar levels were spiking and then how I was sleeping. And what I realized was, because I then wore an Oura ring, because I was like, I don't understand why I'm so tired. I'm sleeping like 10 hours a day and I'm wake up exhausted and I'd wake up with stomach cramps, but I haven't eaten anything. And so I was like, I don't understand, my Oura ring's not telling me. So I started to just get all the tech. I was like, well, what tech's out there? What can I start to like just biohack myself and try and figure out along the way? And so I would, I then got the continuous glucose monitor and I started to take those results and my Oura ring results and start to compare them. And what I started to notice was my blood sugar levels were dipping below like 40 during the night. And I could see that I was getting out of like REM sleep or whatever it was. And so I was like, oh, okay. What if I was able to maintain my sugar levels a little more so that I wouldn't plummet at night? Would I sleep better? And so I would just take the problem and not feel, because I think people get very overwhelmed, especially with what you just said of how many billion, you know, bacteria we've got in our gut. It can feel very, very overwhelming. It's like, take one little thing at a time and do a baby step and see what works. Take another baby step and see how you feel. And so I, in my all of these tests, I've come down to now being in the place where I still cannot eat soy. I cannot have sesame, I cannot eat gluten, and I can't have vegetable oil. And so I, again, going back to the ownership thing, I call every single restaurant if I'm going out and I ask what oil they use. And most of the time they're like, oh, no, we use olive oil. And I say, do you use 100% olive oil? Well, let me go back and check with the chef. Oh, no, it's blended. So I either don't eat at that restaurant or I don't order food where they use oil. So I then taking all the things that I know still bother me, and then again taking the ownership and double checking, am I digesting any of this? And it's painful in the sense of like, it's time consuming. You don't get to go to the restaurants necessarily you like to go to. You have to be a bit of a bother with your partner or with your family because you have to say, I can't eat there, or I have to call in advance. But when I weigh being a bother or having massive gut issues, so I can't show up for my husband as a great wife, I can't show up for my mum as a great daughter, I can't show up for my sister as a great sister, it's an easy decision to make. But you have to start assessing what those things are that bother you. Not Joe next door, not even your family who potentially has similar genetics. You, as an individual, once you're able to start narrowing that down, you feel so empowered again. And then it becomes a process as well. It's like, I just assume that maybe in a year, maybe something else is going to bother me, and maybe I'm going to have to figure out what that is, and maybe I'm going to have to adapt. That's okay, because I'm always now back in tune with how my body feels. And then the last piece to this actually is I don't eat 3 hours before I go to bed or within the 3 hour period. And for an entire year, Josh, an entire year, I would press a stopwatch. And no matter what time I ate, so if I was out for dinner with friends, obviously I would always try to eat earlier. But if my last bite was at 10 p.m., I would stay up till exactly 3 hours before I went to bed. And I realized that the 3 hour mark between my last bite and going to bed was a game changer for me. Now, of course, I didn't understand the science. I was just like, well, what happens if I eat 2 hours before bed? What happens if I eat 3 hours before bed? And again, until I figured that was amazing. And then I heard the science that your digestion slows when you sleep. And so, of course, any food that may be still in my digestion wasn't getting digested. And that's why I was waking up with stomach cramps.
That's an extraordinary amount of discipline. And one of the things behind discipline, you have to have a why. It's really hard to make choices and just do them arbitrarily, to just pick up and go, well, I'm going to eat one blueberry today. Why? Well, I want to get better. Why? And we have to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper until you can connect to that root. Now, someone like yourself, you've spent a lot of your life working in this roots of no bullshit, no excuse, being totally unreasonable. And you found a lot of those. But there are so many people out there who struggle with that discipline. And I truly think a lot of them just don't have the why, right? I mean, if you want to go on a diet, well, I want to lose weight. Okay, why? Well, I want to go to the beach. Why? Okay, I want to look good in a bikini. Why? Because I want to feel confident. Why? Well, I want to feel desirable. Why? Because I got divorced from my husband because I was gaining weight and now he won't look at me. Why? Well, I got depressed when I was a teenager. And we go deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's a true example from a client of mine. So I'm not kind of pulling it out of thin air. So people need to find their why, truly find their deep why to stick to these things. You know, that discipline can be extraordinarily difficult, but it gets these results. How can somebody find their why to start seeing some of the same positive changes that you've had?
Ooh, I think it comes down to A, what you just said, like keep digging deeper of what is that root reason. And for me, a big thing was, I love the story of the moment my gut fell apart because it happened at the most joyous moment. Now, why do I actually love that? Because I could have gone down a different path of, oh, money does buy happiness and all that. I realized, oh, none of this actually matters. All that matters is actually health. Because if I don't feel good about myself, nothing else matters. If I'm going to bed at night and I've got a negative mind that feels defeated, nothing else matters. Now, why does that matter to me? Because I grew up insecure. And so to your point, finding that root cause and not shaming yourself for it, but then finding that root cause and then using that as a momentum to then move forward. So to your point, we do, me and my husband do play a game called No Bullshit, What Would It Take? So what is that goal? What is your why for that goal? Establish that. and then play the game. No bullshit then. What would it actually take for me to get better? And if it means I have to eat one blueberry every 2 days, then that's what I'm going to do. And I think that that's where the discipline part comes in, is that once you've figured out what your North Star is, that thing that you actually want to get to, and then you play the game, no BS, how are you going to get there? And then you take those incremental steps, you start to feel better about yourself, and it's easier to be disciplined because you're not just trying to will yourself in your mind. You're like, okay, today I said 2 blueberries. Like, Lisa, you can either do it or not, but it's very clear what you have to do. I think part of the discipline comes from A, not identifying your why, which you very beautifully said, and then 2, not even knowing where to turn. When people feel lost, when people don't know what steps to take, when people feel like what they're doing isn't working, you can get depleted, you can get defeated, you can not be disciplined because you're like, well, it's not going to work anyway. But if you have a game plan, this is how I build my business. So I kind of did, you know, did the same with my health. It's like, oh, you just have to need a game plan, Lisa. And you need to incrementally move towards that game plan. And even though I don't feel good about myself in any arena, the one thing I can actually feel good about myself in this one moment is I said I was going to eat one blueberry today. And so if I ate that one blueberry and nothing else, I can feel good about myself. And so that started to build the mental confidence that then led into the emotional confidence that then allowed me to keep going. But that's how I had identified my why, my discipline, the steps I was going to take, and then be able to be that disciplined. Because I kept going back to, I felt so badly about myself as a kid. I was bullied, I was teased for my looks, I didn't have confidence. And so every time, so for me, my why is to help a younger female, to help that 14-year-old girl that feels badly about herself. So every time I may want to stray away from my why or my discipline, I go back to, but then you're not going to help that 14-year-old girl, Lisa. Are you okay with that? And my answer every single time for 7 years is hell no. Hell no, I'm not okay with that. And every time you can ask yourself, are you okay with it if you don't stay disciplined and your answer is hell no, then I think you're going to be able to keep going, keep moving forward. If you even stutter or stumble or have to think about it, then your why isn't strong enough yet.
I love that. That's absolutely brilliant. Now, I know we have to start wrapping things up here in a minute, Lisa. You know, it's interesting that when we start to look at gut health, especially in America, I want to throw some fun stats at you just to really wrap for our listeners, to wrap our heads around what's going on. On average, 72% of Americans complain about having gut problems at least once a week. Constipation, diarrhea, bloat, pain, nausea, vomiting, acid reflux, something. Now, according to the CDC, there are 6.5 million cases of inflammatory bowel disease being treated around the world. Now, again, I look at it as a sliding scale. If you think about it like wearing a pair of shoes without a sock, right? And you're going for a hike. It rubs, gets a little raw. It reds, it blisters, it bleeds. That's kind of that sliding scale from IBS to IBD with this ulceration, right? So we've got 6.5 million cases around the world, actively diagnosed, actively being treated. That's Crohn's and colitis. The United States of America is less than 5% of the global population, like 4.7. They have 50% of those cases of IBD.
Wow.
That's where gut health is at in America. And I do concern, this is my goal. I want for this episode, I want this series to really permeate so people can understand. We know all diseases start in the leaky gut. All disease processes start in the gut. And 72% of Americans are on that slippery slope where they're wearing and tearing to possibly becoming part of that 50%. And so for our listeners who have this in their ears right now or hearing this, what is the last thing before we wrap up that you'd like to say to them? What is completely open table? Anything we haven't covered, anything we haven't talked about, anything you want to mention as kind of just a last hurrah?
Oh, those stats really hit me. That's super powerful. Makes you wonder. I mean, I've repeated up quite a bit, but I really do think it's like, don't feel shame over the situation. Don't beat yourself up over it. But I would advise you do take action as much as you possibly can. And I hope we live in a world, at least the people listening, is no one's forcing you to eat certain foods. No one's forcing you to drink certain things. No one's forcing you to not take supplements. So how do you take absolute freaking ownership over that? Like, I don't go back in time and feel badly about what happened to me. I just make sure that I keep looking forward and thinking about what are the things that I can do to keep getting better. And I really worry about people having the victim mentality that this is their life for the rest of their lives. Like, that is just heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking to me if someone thinks that they have to spend the next 30 years in pain. And again, I'm not a doctor, so obviously there's going to be nuance to the stories that people, whoever's listening, so I don't want to, you know, be dismissive of that. But if there's any way you can change your behavior, any way you can change a habit, any way you can change the food that you're eating or the way that you show up every day, like, you can, and it feels empowering to do it one little step at a time. You don't have to go all in. Like I said, I'm still evolving, and it all started from me doing a food diary. So, you know, I think a big part of it is people think that the pain that they're going through, like even, you know, irritable bowel syndrome, it's like, oh yeah, I got irritable bowel syndrome, that's just me. It's like, is it just you? Or is it something you can actually do in order to try and change it? And I see many people who say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. And I just say, how is that mindset working for you? And like, I really do empower people. The thing that you can do, if anything, like, I've started to do cold plunges. I started to recently go to a sauna. Like, I am still evolving because I never think that my health journey is done. And I want to urge people of like, no, you've got this, homie. Like, you've got this. You really can make a beautiful change one step at a time. And there's people out there that understand how you feel. And there's people out there that can absolutely help you change, you know, help you change. It's like, you don't have to do this alone as well. Speak up. Tell the people around you that you love and that love you that you're struggling. And let them know. You know, now I'm not shameful in saying I can only go to a restaurant that serves 100% olive oil. And my family now, because I'm honest and open, I've said why and how it affects me, everyone supports me. So if you can also reach out to anyone around you to support you on this health journey, I urge you to bring them into your world instead of trying to keep them at bay.
I love it. Well, Lisa, I can't think of a better way to wrap up. I just want to thank you so much for your time and your experience and your expertise and your knowledge and just all the things you brought to this episode. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I was a little nervous coming in. I was like, ooh, they got a media team. It's just me and my dog on my couch. But this has been great. Thank you so much.
Oh, Josh, this is something I don't get to talk about enough, and it really impacted my life in such a positive way that if I can help and, you know, inspire your audience to really believe that, you know, they can actually grow and change and improve, then, you know, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for having me on, because your work is truly meaningful and impacting people on their health is life-changing. So thank you for having me.